Hi everyone, Bob Berg, and I'm just flat out excited to have with us today a man who's become really one of my heroes, and the more you get to know him, he'll most likely become one of yours as well. Bob Chapman imagines a world in which people leave work each day fulfilled by their work. He imagines a world full of caring work environments in which people can realize their gifts, apply and develop their talents, and feel a genuine sense of fulfillment for their contributions. And in this world, because their work is fulfilling, people go home happy and are better spouses, parents, neighbors, and friends. As chairman and CEO of $2 billion capital equipment and engineering solutions firm Barry Waymiller, Bob Chapman has championed fulfilling work and a compassionate work environment through his commitment to truly human leadership. He challenges traditional thinking about how to run a business and how to be an effective leader. He offers simple yet groundbreaking ideas on how to create meaningful work environments grounded in people-centric leadership. And the neat thing is that whether you lead a huge corporation, a small business, an entrepreneurial startup, or lead anyone, anywhere, ever, we can all learn how to do the same because he shared everything in his new book, co-authored with Raj Sisodia, Everybody Matters, The Extraordinary Power of Caring for Your People Like Family. Just released, you can click right on his photo or the graphic of the book. Both will take you to everybodymattersbook.com. You want to pick up a copy for yourself and for everyone you know who's a leader or who could become one. But don't read it. Devour it. I did. And now I finally believe things can change in this regard. Bob Chapman, welcome. Congratulations and thank you for writing this book.
It's an honor to be invited to participate with the work you're doing. So what can I do for you today?
Thank you so much. Well, you refer to there being a leadership crisis. What is that crisis?
We began this journey simply trying to be good stewards of the people whose lives were entrusted to us. And in the process of this journey, we discovered that statistically, 7 out of 8 people in this country feel they work for an organization that does not care about them, and 3 out of 4 people are disengaged in this country. And so what we have come to realize is that we are denying these precious human beings that join our organization the opportunity to feel valued. And because of that, we are experiencing a lot of the conflict we are in our homes, our families, our communities, our country, because we are sending people home not feeling valued from organizations. When we say this crisis, it is not just limited to America. It is not limited to business. We have seen this in the healthcare industry. We've seen this in the military. We've seen this in education. We've seen this in France, in Italy, in Germany, in India. This is a crisis. It's hard to see it, okay, because people are walking out of buildings with paychecks and cars and homes. And so it is a crisis, though, because we're killing the very people that are in our society because we are not validating their worth.
Now, you had somewhat of an epiphany at one point because you were very successful. You took a company, a long-time company, an older company. In fact, your dad bought it. You took it over. It was in a very precarious position. You took some risks. You did some great work, but you still managed, if you will, or led, in a sense, the old-fashioned way. But something took place at the wedding of the daughter of a friend. Tell us about that and what you came to realize.
Yeah, and I'm going to step back one step, Bob, to kind of lay a little bit of foundation for this. What was going on in my life that made me maybe more sensitive to these environments is that Cynthia and I were both trying to be incredibly dedicated parents. Cynthia and I have been married about 40 years, but in this environment, we were trying to be good stewards of this blended family we had, which is always challenging, a blended family, hers, mine, and ours. We'd both been married before. And at the same time, I was trying to take what I'd learned in my undergraduate and graduate education in business and apply it to this business that was a challenge that I inherited upon my dad's death. So what happened, Bob, over a period of the 80s and 90s, is it what I, in trying to be that responsible steward of these precious lives that were my blended six children, I was learning about parenting, but what I realized is what I was really learning about was leadership. And what I realized at the same time is many of the things I learned about management in business school were wrong, okay? They were incomplete. They didn't prepare me for the profound responsibility of leadership. And we came to this wedding, if you will, and I'm sitting in this wedding probably now 8 or 9 years ago, and a friend of mine was walking his daughter down the aisle, a very traditional event that most of us have experienced. And, you know, I noticed, you know, because I'm an observer of people and behavior, I noticed that people were kind of oohing and aahing at how lovely this young girl looked and how proud her father was and how precious she was as she prepares to marry this delightful young man. And so when they get to the altar, he takes the hand of his daughter and he gives it to this young man and said, her mother and I give her to be wed to this young man. And he sits down and they cuddle and watch the ceremony. And my mind went, and I don't know why, Bob, I don't know why I did this, but my mind went to a totally different place from that experience. And what I said to myself was, that's not what that father wanted to say. What that father wanted, he was told to say that at the rehearsal last night at church. What he wanted to say is, look at young man, her mother and I have brought this precious young child into this earth. We've given her every ounce of love and affection we can so that she could be whatever she was meant to be. And as she joins you now in this wonderful marriage, we expect for both of you that you will respect the dignity of each other and allow each other through this marriage to be everything you were meant to be. Do you understand that, young man? That's what every father wants to say as he gives away his precious daughter to these precious young men as they enter the ceremony. But, and all of a sudden, and it was just an amazing feeling, all of a sudden I had this revelation. I said, oh my God, all 8,500 team members of ours around the world are somebody's precious child just like that young lady.
Oh.
And it changed, Bob, it changed everything about the way. No longer did I look at somebody when I walked out of that ceremony. No longer did I look at somebody as a receptionist, an engineer, an accountant, a salesperson, a technician. All of a sudden, I looked at these 8,500 lives that were entrusted to me every day as somebody's precious child that I was going to have an opportunity and privilege of having a profound influence in them realizing a life of meaning and purpose. And that calls you to a profoundly different relationship with those people whose lives you invite. So that was, it changed everything I thought. I was never in my undergraduate or graduate education in Indiana, undergraduate, Michigan graduate. I was never, as I recall, taught or made aware of my journey to success would give me a profound opportunity to touch the lives of others. That was my transformative moment when I stopped seeing people as functions and started seeing them as some precious life that I was given the opportunity to impact.
And that transformation in you totally comes across in every single page of your book. That's how powerful it is.
Bob, when you think of that, it changes the way you think about everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you change the premise, basically.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It changed the foundation, and then everything comes of how can I be a better steward of these precious lives that have been entrusted to me. It's no longer about me and my success. It changes the definition of success
right. From
me to the lives of people who I touch.
Exactly. And I want to make sure people know this is a hugely financially successful company that you lead. And it's not that you're in, and here I think is the biggest message, because we often say that money is an echo of value. It's the value that comes first, and you provide the value for the sake of providing value, for touching the lives of people in an exceptional way. As you do that, great things begin to happen for very logical reasons. But now you've got a group of people who are absolutely engaged in what they're doing. And the video by Simon Sinek and Amy Cuddy, and for those listening and watching on the on the blog as you're listening to this, at the very bottom I put that video down there so you can see it. It's absolutely inspiring, because it was difficult for both of them when they came in to do the Harvard study. It was difficult to believe that, well, this company really is doing this stuff.
Yeah, and when Amy Cuddy said, "I thought places like this only existed in my mind,"
mm-hmm.
and she said, "This is as close to you, the only word I can think of to describe what I just experienced in talking to our people was utopia."
Mm-hmm. Love it. Again, the book is Everybody Matters, The Extraordinary Power of Caring for Your People Like Family. Click on the photo or the graphic of the book. If you're listening to this away from your computer, just visit everybodymattersbook.com. So a couple quick thoughts. One was a very simple question you began to ask that led to some huge insights from people. The question was, how did that make you feel? How did that come about, and what was the difference after asking that?
You know, Bob, the only way I know how to explain that is these thoughts come to me. The way I explain it to myself is somebody is using me to send a message, because these are thoughts beyond my experience and education. And I don't know what, you know, a gentleman was giving me an update he's giving a group of us, and he was from our production area in Green Bay, and he was giving us an update on a project called Lean, where the idea Jim Womack of Harvard created of reducing waste and improving efficiency. It's kind of the Toyota production system. And it was all about reducing costs, improving inventory turnovers, improving quality, improving on-time shipment. It was all about metrics, which is the typical language of business. And I was standing there, and I wasn't paying any attention to him, because and my mind was just working, and he finishes the metric update with his two colleagues from our production area, none of whom I met. And all of a sudden, I said to him in front of our presidents and our VP of operations, I said, how did it affect your life? And he said, my wife is talking to me. And I said, I don't understand. And he said, do you know what it's like? I now realize what I have been working in for the last 30 years, but now with the change in this truly human leadership, I realize now that when I go home, I feel valued, and when I feel valued, I treat my wife better, and when I treat her better, she talks to me. And I said, you know the metric we left out? We left out the reduction in the divorce rate in America when we treat people with respect and dignity and let them know that who they are and what they do matters. We will have a profound change in this country in terms of the human relationships, because we found out that day, Bob, the first time I've ever heard this in my life. It may exist. Nobody's ever told me that it exists. But it never occurred to me in my education or my experience that the way we lead at work affects the way people live and lead at home. And as we began teaching truly human leadership, Bob, 90% of the feedback from what we teach about caring and raising people's dignity up, that it profoundly affects how they feel about themselves. So when they go home full of a sense of fulfillment, knowing that who they are and what they do matters, they treat their spouse better. And the reasons we know this is because they told us. That's what 90% of our feedback from our teaching truly human leadership is about how it affects their marriage. And we didn't intend. We were trying to allow people to be more thoughtful leaders, shaping the lives of those entrusted to them. And what they told us is they became better spouses, better parents, better sons and daughters. And do you know what that feels like when people tell you that their relationship with their teenage daughters has improved, that their wife is talking to them more, and we're talking in a business environment? So it's the first time, Bob, we realize that the way we lead affects the way people live.
In Barry Waymiller's very powerful Guiding Principles of Leadership, there's a premise that I believe encapsulates, it creates the environment for everything that you're doing. It's basically, you know, we measure success by the way we touch the lives of people. It's powerful. But then say someone says, well, wait a second, okay, guiding principles, these are great, but what about, Enron, as you talk about in the book, Enron had a very terrific value statement, including, as you say, sterling phrases such as, we do not tolerate abusive or disrespectful treatment, ruthlessness, callousness, arrogance don't belong here. We work with customers and prospects openly, honestly, and sincerely, and we know where that went. So I want to talk with you a moment just about congruency with stated values. Your company's going great. Everything's just fantastic. And then the crash of 2008 and its ripple effect that so many of your clients and customers were suffering huge losses, now they began to affect your company. So what would happen? And I'm sure a lot of people were asking this. Would these great values go out the window? Would people be in fear of losing their jobs? Would leadership walk the walk, as they say, or was it really all talk? In other words, how did the vision and the moral compass manifest itself in handling this situation? And a lot of people in many situations with many companies, the people would get laid off while the leadership would take a bonus. But you didn't do that. So how did you decide in this family environment how you would get through this?
Well, first of all, again, prior to our embracing the guided principles of leadership, I would have done what everybody else did. That's what we're taught to do. That's the accepted behavior. We would have laid people off, downsized, right-sized to the economic environment, and I would have been able to go out to the country club and see my friends, and I probably would have been recognized that I did the tough things you've got to do in business when things are tough. But because, and let me go back to the statement that you made, because I think it's important. From all things good can come. The Enron situation, as horrible as it was, and the people whose lives were hurt by it, the investors, the team members, the image it cast on business, actually was a stimulus for us. We took that brokenness of Enron, and Rhonda Spencer said to me that day we came up with our Guiding Principles of Leadership, she said, Bob, she said, Enron had great statements on the wall. How are we going to be any different now? We have a great statement, and I said, we are going to go out and take it off the wall and put it in people's heads and hearts. So I began evangelizing. I would go out and sit down with mixed groups of team members and say, we've developed these guiding principles of leadership. This is what we believe in. Tell me how our behavior aligns with these principles. And people started sharing with us inconsistencies between what we stated as our goals and what we were actually doing, and we immediately addressed those issues, and it made us incredibly sensitive to inconsistencies between our behavior and our beliefs. So I'd been doing this for probably 3 years all over the world and had tremendous response and engagement with people. As I didn't put it on the wall, I put it in people. I explained to them, this is what we believe and why we believe it. Now talk to me and share with me how we live those principles. So when the economic downturn hit in 2008, it was embedded in my soul, okay? It wasn't on the wall like Enron's. It was in my soul. It was in our language. It was in our behavior. And the economic, and so therefore I had the foundation upon which to think differently. So what happened, Bob, is I walked into our board meeting in January 2009, and the first thing my board said to me before I can even sit down was, don't you need to lay off people? And I said, I don't think so. I think we've got a good enough backlog, even though orders have softened. I think we'll get through this. And I had checked before, and that was our feeling. They said, well, aren't you being optimistic? And I said, I don't think so. But about 6 weeks later, I was in Italy, and I got an email from our largest operation in Green Bay that one of our largest customers just put a major order on hold. So it's one thing to lose the orders you didn't get yet. It's another thing to lose all of a sudden your backlog disappears and you're already working on this. So the, if you will, the crisis struck home about 6 weeks after our January board meeting. And I sat in my hotel room in Italy and said, what am I going to do? If we measure success, and because I had this dialogue in my mind, I sat there and said, well, if we measure success by the way we touch the lives of people, we're going to hurt people if we lay people off. There's no jobs anywhere. And we can't hurt people. And so what it did, Bob, is it, as a result, I had to think. And I thought with my heart, because this has engaged my heart. And I said, what would a caring family do if a family member was in crisis? We'd all pitch in so that we'd share in the crisis. And so I said, so it, that led to a thought I'd never had in my 30-some year career. I said, and I had never heard anybody do this. I didn't know anything. I said, what if everybody took a month off so nobody had to lose their job? I just said that to myself. And what if we suspend our 401k match to their retirement program? So I emailed the team back in St. Louis. They started debating it and developing it. And by the time I landed, we implemented this, and morale dropped. Morale went up dramatically because people, even though they were in effect, were giving up a month compensation, as a trade-off, we gave them that time off anytime it worked for them personally. Not when we wanted it, but when they wanted it. And the second thing we did is that this act, because I accompanied it with a video message, what I said was that, you know, we're all pitching in so that nobody gets hurt. And so when people took a month off and, if you will, therefore contributed a month's salary, they didn't do it to help the company be more profitable. They did it to help their fellow team members. And so it was an act of charity, not an act of cost reduction. And the morale went up dramatically. People emailed me and said, I can't believe I've been worried about losing my job, all my friends and my family members losing the job. I can't believe I now can relax. So our morale went up dramatically. 6 months later, things got better quicker than we thought. And I sat down and I said, well, if when things got worse quicker, we acted thoughtfully and asked people to give up a month's salary. Now things got better quicker, 6-9 months later, and what's the corresponding act? And we decided to go back. We think we're the only company in the country that did this, who suspended 401k match. And we went back and we gave back to people their 401k match because we said, your retirement is important to us. We can now, you worked with us in the downturn. We are going to try to make a commensurate act in the upturn. And we gave them back their 401k match. And that was the second shot of, you actually do care about us. They didn't expect it. As far as they were concerned, just returning to a match would have been good. So, Bob, if we hadn't had the foundation of our guiding principle of leadership, if I wasn't out prophesizing these, sharing these with people, I don't know that I wouldn't have converted to traditional behavior and tried to reconcile that it's the worst economic condition. Nobody could have expected this, and people would have dealt with it. But because we believed in these guiding principles of leadership, because we were out all over the world sharing them, it guided us to a better outcome, a more compassionate outcome that we could then align it with our guiding principles of leadership said, we measure success by the way we touch the lives of people.
So, so very inspiring, and I just love that story in the book. Okay, I don't have you for much longer, so I'll be real quick with this, but I've got to get a couple quick things in. Barry Waymiller University. This was just reading about that was fantastic, and one of the great messages I took from the teaching was when you go into these companies, and this is how the teaching just and the people focused teaching just changed lives. You go into these companies, and by the way, and I'll just say this quick, as you make the point, you did not acquire companies. Now most people would say, well, they've acquired dozens and dozens of companies and different countries and different cultures. You say you don't acquire them, you adopted them. And I love that because, as you said, when you acquire, the focus is on how it helps the acquirer. When you adopt, you focus on how it helps the adoptee. You acquire a car, you adopt a child. I just love that, had to put that in. But so you adopt these companies, and I mean, these companies were just about to go out. I mean, just
right.
You know, horrible.
Yes.
Yeah. And yet you did not bring in heroes from the outside to rescue them. Your philosophy was the problem is not with the leader. And through Barry Waymiller University, you were able to touch these people's lives, turn them into leaders. And again, it didn't stay at the company. It went home to their personal lives. But you just share with that how you made that decision. You weren't going to replace people and bring them in. You were going to work with the people you had and bring out their best.
Yeah, you know, we have a statement in our overall mission that leaders are everywhere. Find them. And I would say to you, sometimes you got to adjust the leadership, because sometimes people in senior leadership positions don't have the tools. So I'd say to you, Bob, that what we made it, you know, if I said tomorrow we're all going to speak Chinese, a lot of us would struggle because of our lack of knowledge of the Chinese language. If I said tomorrow to a bunch of fine people that we're now going to be caring, truly human leadership, people-centric leadership leaders, they'd say to me, I don't know how to do that. And so we had to create the university, because we have a lot of well-intentioned people that have learned practices that are not around people-centric, that are numeric-centric. And so we needed to give people the gift. There's a lot of leaders there's a lot of managers that we need to have leaders, but they don't have the skills. They were never taught to be leaders. As one gentleman said to us in Baltimore, I know how to be a foreman, but I have no idea how to be a leader. So our goal, Bob, is to take a positive attitude. There's leaders everywhere. Find them and give them the skills and the tools that allow them to be good stewards of the lives. So we did create, as you mentioned in the beginning, we created a university, because we couldn't send our people back to our university mm-hmm. system, because we mm-hmm. teach people to be managers. And I said, you know, we can't send our people back to become leaders. There's no teaching content for leaders, so we had to start from a clean sheet of paper. And what we did is we created the leadership checklist from our experience in aviation. Every time pilots prepare a passenger jet to take people someplace, they go through a rigorous checklist to ensure that when you walk on that airplane, you are safe. And I said, from my experience in aviation, I said, look, we should create a leadership checklist so that every time somebody walks in our building, anywhere in the world, they're safe. And we need to teach people how to execute that checklist, what it means to be a truly human leader. And so we teach that checklist, and people blossom. They, you know, and again, 90% of the feedback when we teach leadership, which came from my parenting of our blended family, people tell us how it profoundly impacts their marriage and their children. And what more meaningful feedback could you give? Because we say parenting and leadership is identical. It is a stewardship of the lives entrusted to you. So we look in our organizations for people who have that capacity to be truly human leadership. And then we've got to give them the tools. They have the passion, but they don't have the tools. So you can't just look for nice people, because they don't have the tools. And our education system doesn't create those tools. I actually interviewed a dean of a you know, graduate school, a good, great graduate school, and a very fine gentleman. I said, what is your vision for the 2 years you have the stewardship of these young men and women in your university? And he said, we don't have a vision. We have beliefs that are on the wall. And I said, well, if you don't have a vision for what you're trying to achieve in the 2 years you have the care of these young men and women, how do you know what to teach? And he said, we teach what the market wants. And I said, Dean, if you ever ask me to be on the university, which I assume you will not, I would shut down your university the first day until you had a vision for what it is we are trying to impart on these young men and women, the 2 years we have with them. And to me, we need to create leaders. Leaders who have a profound sense of what leadership is. Not management, not supervision, but leadership. And then we need to give them the tools to exercise that responsibility so when they graduate your fine institution, they can enter the world and be good stewards of the lives and have meaningfully successful lives, shaping and allowing others to be who they're intended to be. So, Bob, it's, you know, we had to create a university because there's nowhere we could send people to become truly human leaders, and that is the only thing we could allow because otherwise we're hurting the very people whose lives are entrusted to us.
Oh, wow. You know, and there's so much more. I mean, I could just go through the entire book, and I did. I mean, every page highlighted, underlined, questions, thoughts, but just this is the book that I just hope everyone gets. I just want everyone to get this book and again to absolutely devour it. You know, partway through the book, and I'm just going to end with this, and I know you are busy, and I just so appreciate you taking so much of your time
to
do this.
Talking to you, Bob.
Thank you. And partway through the book, you summed it up. The primary purpose of Barry Waymiller, you said that the purpose is crystal clear. We're in business so that all our team members can have meaningful and fulfilling lives. You said, hey, we make this, some of the best machinery in the world, but I will not go to my grave being proud of all the machines we have built. I'll be deeply grateful for all the lives that we touched and uplifted in our journey. The machinery we build is just the economic engine that enables us to touch lives. Those lives are our paramount concern. Again, the book, Everybody Matters, The Extraordinary Power of Caring for Your People Like Family. Click right on the photo or the graphic of the book. The book was written by Bob Chapman, CEO of Barry Waymiller, along with Raj Sisodia, a business expert and fantastic person. Bob, I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you being with us, and best of continued success in your journey.
And thanks for helping us share this message, because we honestly believe this is the key to the world we all want to be a part of, and we want generations to follow to be a part of, so they can be who they're intended to be as we bring them into the world.
Mm. My absolute pleasure, and I agree. Well, that's it from here, everyone. Until next time, Bob Berg wishing you a great day.